Angie's List is now Angie, and we've heard a lot of theories about why.
I thought it was an eco move. Fewer words, less paper.
No, it was so you could say it faster.
No, it's to be more iconic.
Must be a tech thing.
But those aren't quite right. It's because now you can compare upfront prices, book a service instantly, and even get your project handled from start to finish.
Sounds easy.
It is, and it makes us so much more than just a list. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today.
Fill her up.
You're listening to the Gas Digital Network.
What is up, my fellow addicts? Ralph Sutton, the SDR Show. This week, Joe Latrullio. You know him from Brooklyn Nine-Nine and a bunch of other stuff. But right now, he has a new movie out called Outpost, which he is the writer and director of. He comes in. Dave Landau comes on as well to be my co-host. Really got to ask him a lot of Brooklyn Nine-Nine questions. Just a fun guy to have on the show. Remember, we do this every Wednesday, every Saturday, 9 p.m. Eastern time. And you can listen or watch for free anywhere you consume a podcast or on YouTube. But if you go to gasdigital.com, use the code SDR, you are going to get a 1 week free trial and 20% off. But really, just share the love. Get the show bigger and better. And that's all that matters, is letting people know you listen to the SDR Show. Here it is right now, the Joe Latrullio episode of what I just mentioned, the SDR Show.
This is the intro to the shit show. Sex, drugs, and rock and roll. This is a hit show. Show me a tit show. Please, someone walk the hole. It's beat, our beat. It's hookers and blow. It's art, it's far. You need to know. The SDR Show. Let's go.
It is the SDR Show, sex, drugs, and rock and roll show. I am Ralph Sutton. Back with me for the first time in a bit, it is Dave Landau. How are you, Dave?
Good, man. How about you?
Dave, last time you were going to be on the show, we found out 2 minutes beforehand that you didn't show up. And
yes,
thank God you're here this time, is all I'm going to say.
Yes, I was stuck on a plane, which is now a common theme. Last night was 6 hours. It was pretty awesome.
God, I'm sorry to hear that. All right, so I'm going to try and give this guy the right introduction here. Actor, comedian, writer, producer, now director as well for feature films, although he did direct an episode or two here and there in different landscapes. Born in Queens, raised in Florida. You might know him as Charles Boyle. Been in The State, Reno 911, Stella. I mean, I go on and on. Over 100 credits on IMDb, for God's sakes. Pronounce the G. It's Joe Latrullio. How are you, buddy?
What's up, guys? Thanks for having me. It's great to be on the show.
Well, thanks for coming on, buddy.
Yeah, thanks for being on.
Yeah, of course.
Let me know if I'm saying this right before we get into anything else. Is it Nicolaj? Nicolaj.
Nicolaj.
That's it. Fair enough. And I will get into, by the way, I did watch the whole movie, so we'll talk about that as well.
That's already a victory. That's a victory.
Yeah, I do insane amount of research. That is my, Dave's a comic, smarter than me. He can get out, go just wing it. I can't wing it. So I got to come in with some prep work.
I like
that's just
that.
What I got to do.
Well, The State was one of my first things that I loved. So I'm
thanks,
a big
man.
Fan. Yes, yeah,
so let's start there. What's interesting is, so Tom Lennon, Michael Ian Black, and Rob Garrett have all been on the show, right?
Hey, who? Rob?
Tom
Garrett.
Lennon.
Yeah.
Tom Lennon, right?
Yes.
Michael Ian Black and Garrett.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I'm so, yes, that's right. Ben, I haven't remembered his Robert in so long that I was like, wait a minute. Anyway, yes, gotcha. Yeah,
they've all been on the show. But The State, which some people may not realize this, originally started, it was called You Wrote It, You Watch It, hosted by Jon Stewart, and you guys were just kind of in that, and as like almost like with Drunk History, where like you'd reenact things and have sketches, and that blossomed into The State. Is that correct?
That's correct. I mean, the group actually met back at NYU, is where we started, but that first show, you're absolutely right, was with Jon Stewart, called You Wrote It, You Watch It, and we were reenacting all sorts of kind of letters that people would write in about various topics, and so from there, we got hired to do the show, The State. Yeah.
And it came out of that. How many seasons was that first you wrote it, you watch it? Like two?
Gosh, I can't even remember. Probably, it wouldn't be more than that. You know, the seasons were like the number of episodes per season were just so strange back then. Mm-hmm. And just figuring it all out. Like the state seasons were, I think, just six episodes a season. So technically we did four seasons, but, you know,
wow,
do them
pretty well.
I don't even remember there being like a set showtime. I could be way wrong on that, but I was like in middle school.
This is why most people haven't seen it.
Yeah, I was going to say, like, it was every now and then, and it'd be like, it'll be tonight at 10. And it'd be like, next time it was at like 6. You're like, what is this?
Yeah,
it was my favorite show, but I could never find it. And yeah, I loved that
show. We also couldn't find it. We were on it. You know, they kept switching around on us.
Do they, and I'm sorry for not knowing this, but do they all exist somewhere right now? Like if I wanted
they
to go
do,
watch.
Yeah. They're on DVD. All the episodes are on DVD. But the only caveat is that the original music, we had to do sound-alikes because when we did the show, MTV had the rights because of the videos to all these amazing songs, which became like an identity for the state as well. We had this cool music, but then you want to go home video, then you start paying the bucks, and we just didn't have any money. But our composer, Craig Wedren, did a fantastic job of kind of getting the vibe of whatever those original songs were.
One of my, I know it's not your line, but a line that I will still say to this day to people is, I want to dip my balls in it. That is still one of my favorite lines of all time.
Yeah. I mean, that was our way of saying, well, we don't want to do recurring characters. And he's like, just do them. I'm like, all right, we'll get a load of this catchphrase.
Yeah. He's going to the Last Supper.
Yeah.
With the to dip his balls in it.
You know, but it was important, you know, for, you know, the censors, legal reasons. We had to have some golf balls in his hands. So it's clear.
That's fucking great. Let me ask you this. So the couple of things that I don't know anything about, I don't even know how much of these you're in, but you're in the new season of the Muppets Mayhem, which is like a Dr. Teeth thing, and you're in some sort of, and I don't know much about it. There's not a lot on it online, but a reboot or a continuing story of the Flintstones. You're in one episode called Bedrock. Yeah. Can you tell me anything about those before we get into the Outpost and a half a dozen Brooklyn Nine-Nine questions?
Muppets Mayhem is like, you know, it's kind of a bucket list guest star thing for me. I mean, who all of us loved, especially that it's really just about, you know, Dr. T and Animal and the band there. And so that's just a guest star there. I play a techie. The group goes online and into a virtual reality space. And I'm there kind of at the controls there. And then the other one, Bedrock, I don't know, you know, other than this is a project that Elizabeth Banks, her husband, Max Handelman, are producing out of Brownstone with an incredible cast of Stephen Root and Amy Sedaris. And we did a pilot presentation. I don't know where it all lies, especially with the kind of conditions that we're looking at with the strike and everything. But the idea is that it's about 20 years later or 10 years later. The Flintstones are leaving the Stone Age and entering the Bronze Age. So
that's wild.
We pick it up from there 10 years later, and it's great. It's really funny, and I hope it moves forward. Yeah,
that's good. And also, I'm sure another bucket list item was getting to do an episode of History of the World Part Two. One of those that had to be a bucket list thing.
Yeah, it was amazing. I mean, that, you know, the 1981 Part One, I just was on kind of repeat on, you know, either on cable or.
Yeah, we're the same age, so I know that was a childhood repeat for me as well.
For sure. Yes, and so that was just a dream, just to do anything affiliated with Mel Brooks. He was a big influence for me, for all of us, as you know. And, you know, History of the Part One and also High Anxiety was one I was watching a lot.
To me, it was the holy trinity of Blazing Saddles, High Anxiety, and Young Frankenstein. And then obviously, of course, History of the World. But those, to me, like, I'm never sick of watching those. I'll never get sick of them.
Yeah. Yeah,
it's a different world.
So now was he? I was curious about working with Mel Brooks. He was on set as the director, right?
He was not on set.
Okay, so he just was the writer.
Nick Kroll and Ike Barinholtz and Wanda Sykes were kind of the wizards behind that.
Okay,
I think Nick and Ike were on set when David Wayne, Ken Marino, and I did our bit. But Mel Brooks was not on set, and you know, I missed the premiere, and I hear he was at the premiere, so. A big regret, but he wasn't on set. No,
I mean, all the time. Do yourself 90, a favor.
He wants to, like, you know, kick it back at home and watch Jeopardy. You know.
Oh, I'm sure he'd rather just have somebody else just write the words and see someone else work. But yeah, I was just curious if you were able to work like kind of really one on one with them. But
no, I wish.
Even being able to work his words is amazing.
My mom used to book a comedy club here in New York years ago, and Estelle Reiner, Carl Reiner's wife, used to perform there. And when this, like, 1985, maybe. She's sitting at a table with Mel Brooks and Carl Reiner watching Estelle Reiner sing. I mean, that's just fucking crazy to have that memory.
Incredible. Wow.
So now you did direct an episode of Brooklyn Nine-Nine. You've done a couple of other directing things here and there, right?
Yeah.
But this is now, you wrote it, you directed it. It's not comedy, not even close.
No.
And if I'm not mistaken, you've also self-financed it. Your wife is in it. Yeah. The movie is called The Outpost. And I also believe it took a very long time to get this out, because I've seen stories dating back almost 3 years ago about this movie. The first thought is like, what made you decide now is the time to write and direct my own thing? The thing about it being not comedy, I think I read that your original love was horror. And in fact, you wrote a story about a haunted rock when you were a kid, if I'm not mistaken.
That's right. You really did do your research. Yeah, man. Incredible, Ralph. This movie, it took about 5 years to do. It was, like you said, horror was the first love, right? So even before comedy, I'm ashamed to say, but I'll throw it out there. Like, even early SNL and even Monty Python, I didn't really get to know well until college, until NYU. And I knew them, of course, and I'd seen some Python sketches. But, you know, aside from Mad Magazine and listening to, you know, Richard Pryor and Carlin records, you know, that was my limit on comedy. My love was, you know, reading Fangoria and Stephen King and whatnot. And so when I started writing stories, I basically just aped Stephen King. I mean, that was how I learned how to write, and, you know, one sentence paragraphs, and, you know, and the story you're talking about is so boring. I mean, it was about a rock. People would go up there on a cliff to make out in front of this rock, and the rock would make them see things and they'd fall off the cliff. And so, you know, I think it was called like Rocky Horror in the Picture Show. Just terrible pun. God. You know, it was, it was
a Rocky,
was
a Rocky romance. You know? A Rocky romance. Why not?
It's very Mad Magazine.
I was 12 years old. That's what you do then. You kind of just, you know, copy what you know. And, that was like the first, you know, that my first love was that. And so, after having done some TV shows and being fortunate enough to be on one that went for 8 years and being tired of everyone saying no, I'm like, I'm just going to do it. And so that's how Outpost came to be. And then, of course, working with Beth, my wife, who's a terrific actor, I knew it was going to be in the household for like years. And so I wanted her to be a part of it, aside from the fact that she had the chops to play the role. So that's kind of big, rough kind of timeline. Anyway,
here's my name for your old movie. Ready? Stone Cold Murder. That's a better name for it.
That's way better.
It's rock solid.
Rock solid. I get it.
There we go. Yes.
I'm just more excited to listen.
It's a story I couldn't take for granted. So
I love the idea that you were. I love the idea that horror, though, and comedy, because I think it mixes a lot better than most people realize. And the rhythm is a lot of the same with the timing and the building up tension. Do you feel that's the same when you write it? Like, you're kind of looking at it in the same way of like building up those moments?
Yeah, it's fine. It's finding those moments. I think the way I was. When I write a movie, I love kind of thinking of a great scene that I would just want to like see. And I often kind of like figure out how to reverse engineer. With Outpost, I kind of worked backwards, because I knew that we needed to have a small cast. I knew I wanted Beth in it. I knew that since we didn't have a lot of money, production value was important. I thought of like, well, kind of where would be like an incredible view? Oh, top of a mountain. Didn't think about the logistics, how I was actually going to do that. But then once I had those kind of elements in place, I thought about the horror movies that I loved, which are Descent into Madness and Isolation and Paranoia, Shining, obviously, Repulsion, and some other ones. And so I started thinking of a story that would happen on top of a mountain that would it would warrant those kind of those scary things. And so that's how the story came. This story wasn't like, I gotta tell this story. Like, I've been thinking about the story for years. I went kind of a different way. And so once I had that story, then I started thinking of, you know, some.
So also, by the way, as I did watch the movie and I did enjoy it, but it's weird. I don't know if I would call it a horror. It's more a thriller. Is that a fair? I don't even know if you'd make that. There is some gory stuff to it at some point.
Yeah.
But I feel like it was more like a mind fuck.
Yeah.
Than it is a horror. I don't think that's
unfair to say. I think the challenge we had with this movie was always like, how do we sell or market this movie? I mean, I think the third act is very much like a horror movie, but leading up to that, it isn't. It's more of a psychological thriller. What's going on? We're doing the movie from the main character's POV, and she's quite a troubled soul. So it's also coming off of
a sensitive topic of being attacked, which I also imagine And I, you know, in the times we lived in, I'm sure you had to get some people on board to make sure that you're handling that subject matter in a way that's not going to offend anybody, because you are dealing with a delicate subject.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, PTSD and domestic violence. I don't know anything certainly about being a woman and an abuse survivor like that. But, you know, after I wrote the script, I sent it to a stunt coordinator at the time who was going to work with us. And she read the script, and I hadn't known this, but after reading the script, she was kind of bold enough to and share that she was an abuse survivor. And she was saying that I handled the material well. That meant a lot to me. I read a book called The Body Keeps the Score, which is a lot about PTSD and that. And so, yeah, it was a super sensitive subject matter that I know there'll be pushback, and that's okay. I mean, I welcome that dialogue. That's a topic that we need to talk more about. So, you know, I'm ready to take that criticism.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard. I mean, these days it's hard not to take any criticism for doing anything. But if you've had somebody who's actually been a survivor of it that thinks you're handling it right and giving you kind of a green light on the authenticity of it, I think that's important. I think that's really the best you can do.
It was one of those things also where I wanted to make sure that the terror wasn't, you know, a guy beating up on a woman. Like, you know, that wasn't this. The terror of this movie is the PTSD. And like, you know, 8 million Americans suffer from this every year, you know. And so that's something where the terror is at any moment that trauma comes back into her life and affects her decisions. And that's where I felt the horror, the terror lived in this movie. It wasn't about the incident itself.
And the movie, I don't want to give anything away. I'm trying my best to dance around it. But it deals a lot with her in isolation because she's working at an outpost looking for fire. How much of that did you research to make sure that's all relatively accurate? And I also heard that you had to delay a couple of times because there is actual fire seasons, and that had to delay the production.
That's right. Yeah, I did quite a bit of research. You know, I was kind of just learning about the terminology of calling in a fire. And we have, you know, I talked to a couple of the firefighters there in the Idaho Department of Lands and went over the script with them and said, hey, how does this sound? Does this sound right? And so they were checking that. And we had scouted for that tower, for a tower, for about 2 years. Mm-hmm. We found that tower and then started working with a guy named Dan Brown, who is the head of the state agency there. And he was just fantastic and really welcomed us into the community and into his tower and let us work there. And you know, he said that the best time to shoot was in July because there's snow on that mountain. It's 6,300 feet up. And there's, sorry about that, guys.
By the way, he was bragging, Dave, before he came on, saying, don't worry, I'm putting my phone on do not disturb. So apparently that didn't happen.
Mine doesn't seem to work when I do it either, though, honestly. I don't know. I'm just getting old and I don't understand anything.
Yeah, somehow I couldn't hit it.
I do it all the time. I don't understand it.
So we had a limited window. There was like snow on the mountain until June, and then active fire season starts in August. So we just had this window. Right. COVID hit in 2020. We shot in summer of 21. And so it was a tight window, you know, to get that done.
That's pretty wild. And I like that you were so transparent on your IG stories, kind of like going through everything in the production process, going back a while now. It was great to see that, because as someone who's just a fan of yours and a fan of watching how these, you know, pulling back the curtain, so to speak, it was nice to see.
There's a lot more. I'll do a shameless plug on the movie's website, outpostmovie.com. There's a lot of behind the scenes and clips on there for anyone that's interested that covers a lot of that stuff. I mean, look, we had to make sure that we were safe up there. We it took an hour to get up this mountain, an hour down. We lost 2 hours every day. We didn't lose light because we were in the summer and we were 30 miles from the Canadian border. We were pretty north. And so it was pretty, pretty light out there until 9:30, 10 at night. But making those 12-hour days were, you know, it was tricky.
That's pretty wild. And then I like the idea that you're directing your wife. You're directing a feature film for the first time. You're directing your wife, I imagine, for the first time. I could be wrong, but I think that's also the first time.
Yeah.
And this story made me laugh because, I mean, not married, but I think the idea is funny, where you just, instead of being a director, your line was, look, this is your motivation. We got 15 minutes to get this shot in, which is like the worst thing
You could tell an actor.
It was the biggest. That was not that was my moment of failure for sure. Taking full accountability for that. It was one of these things where like we were out of time and we were, and I'm like, your motivation is 50 minutes. And she teases me about it, rightfully so. Because I couldn't have pulled that move with probably any other actor.
Right. Of course. I'm sure there was a discussion about it after the set was done.
Well, there was, but you know, the one thing that I'm kind of proud of, and she seems to be pleased with it too, is that, you know, before we went to Idaho, I'm like, I think we need separate rooms. I think we're not going to survive this if we're in the same room after 14 hour days. And she agreed and it worked out great. I was able to do my thing. She could get away from me. And I think it probably saved the marriage.
I think that's the secret to marriage and relationships.
Yeah.
It's a little bit of separation. It's true.
Yes.
It actually, I mean, not only that,
she had to get into a pretty fucking, you know, unique place.
Yeah, that's gonna be rough.
I'm sure she had she brings that home a little bit. How could she not?
Yeah, you know, it was so, I had to be careful because I wanted to make sure that she knew that she could do this role. And what I couldn't say is like, honey, I've seen the crazy look in your eyes. Like you have that.
You've gone further than this many times.
Yeah.
Yes.
You're secretly like, you should just stay in another room.
I'm grateful you didn't have an axe at some of these moments about where we're going
to
go.
Remember last Thursday when I forgot to put the toilet seat down? Go there.
Yeah.
Go there.
Yeah. That's the spot. That's where you got to be. Remember when I forgot to feed the dog, you know?
When you do something to like, because obviously you're trying to capture like a vast sort of emptiness, even though there's a lot of stuff that can be out there, what do you do for cinematography in that case to kind of make it appear to be that like that emptiness and alone, like to capture the isolation?
Well, I mean, just being at a real location like that does help.
Is what did it,
You know, I mean, that was my DP, Frank Ferreira, I've known since I was 17. And he and I go way back. And we were both like, look, let's just make sure we have to do this at a real tower. Because there's nothing special about the script. I mean, it's a familiar story is what I mean to say. Like, I think it's good, but like, it's nothing new. So there's no reason to be doing this movie unless we go to the tower. So then once we got to the tower, I needed to get what's called a telehandler, which is kind of like a cherry picker up there. So we could really come back far from the tower and then really... Mm-hmm. Like you're saying, Dave, get the sense of that openness there. So that was one way that we did.
Dave, to give you some ease of mind, don't worry. There's full frontal male nudity in this as well.
That's right.
Oh, good.
I knew you were worried about it, Dave.
Well,
that was going to be your next question.
So it's not a horror movie?
A pretty decent sized hog in it for a moment or two.
Exactly. Yeah. So you know, get your paws ready, get your screenshots ready.
Oh, I'm excited.
Yeah. Was there a casting day for the guy with the penis, or is that just someone you knew? Or
you know what? I had to just trust. I had to be like, does anyone want to do this? And then you get what you get, you don't regret. You know what I mean?
At that point, just lucked out.
I just lucked out.
He lucked out as far as I could see. He's the one that lucked out.
That's right.
You know, it's funny. The only time I associated you, besides on Brooklyn Nine-Nine.
Yeah, you have to be well hung to be like, oh, I'll do it.
his hands are up before he even finished his sentence.
Yeah, you're
anybody
like,
wants to show
really
full front?
It.
Yeah, I'm in. I'm here.
Yeah, hey, I'm good. Right don't here. Worry.
And fine. By the way, in Anytime. Good shape, too. He was like thin and it just, you know, everything.
He was ripped. He was shredded. Yeah, Doug Dawson.
He nailed it. Yeah, yeah, very good.
Yeah. Born for that moment.
I watched this thing. I remembered. I had to look it up. It was the last time I saw you dealing with a dead body outside of Brooklyn Nine-Nine was that what is it called? I Want to Show You a Dead Body. It was like an old show.
Oh yeah, Rob Hubel's show. Yeah.
And I was like, I remember that. And it was like I went to watch that again, and that took me down a rabbit hole of some unique, weird, short films that you have done.
Oh yeah, what did you find?
The one that I got a real kick out of this. It's only 4 minutes long, but I would tell people to watch it. It's called Rock and Roll Legends Presents Islands. And it's from a long time ago, but you're in it. Michael Cera's in it. Bill Hader is in it. You play a musical critic who lost his virginity to the band Islands. It's a very long time ago.
What? Wait. Oh, is this part of
the fake mockumentary? It's like a rock about a band that doesn't exist.
Is it a trailer or just a quick 4 minute?
It's like a four. I just saw the 4 minute teaser. I don't think there's an actual movie. I think it's a short. It's like a fake.
Wow.
Yeah, and that was really fun to watch.
because there was a digital series called The Line that Simon Rich wrote that I think Bill was in and some other people. I thought you were going to bring that out. I totally forgot about The Island. Yes.
And then you very proudly in the clips how you lost your virginity to this band or something like that. It was just a great 4 minutes. But then this going back way far, I found this online. It's David Wayne's first film. I think it's your first, Tom Lennon's first.
Aisle 6,
which is about a bizarre universe where plumbing is more important than sports.
Yeah, yeah, that's right. That was David Wayne's student film. And we shot that in Cleveland. This is like 91. And what I remember about that shoot is that when we started shooting is also when we invaded Iraq for the first time.
Wow.
I remember that being on the news in the background. Like, it's a weird connection. You know, it's always weird how you remember these things. It was so long ago. But yeah, that was like my takeaway.
That's pretty wild. And that's, so those are all people that you met in NYU. These are people that are friends for life or during your time in NYU, right?
Still going. Yeah. Still working with them. It's the best.
That's pretty cool.
That's incredible. That's pretty wild. Was he from Cleveland or is that just where you filmed?
He's from Shaker Heights.
Gotcha. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Before we go any further, we got a brand new sponsor on the network and it's called Mango. It's basically just a dick pills, penis pills, make your penis hard. That's all they care about. It's an innovative compound that will level up your bedroom game. We've talked about dick pills for a long time in different ways, shapes, or forms, but this one is 100% online with a free doctor visit, no subscription required, and they taste like mangoes, and maybe you could tell your lady that maybe your penis will. They can taste it and find out. You never know. It's possible. I don't know. They are a sponsor of the entire network. You go to mangorx.com, mangorx.com. Use the promo code GAS15, and you're getting 15% off your first order. And let me tell you right now, just double that order because you know you're going to need it. It's rapid dissolving tablet. It hits the bloodstream quick for faster results. Mango flavored, as I said. There's no reason not to go anywhere but Mango. MangoRx.com, promo code GAS15. Get a hard penis and keep listening to this podcast. All right, let's get back into it. I'm going to ask you a couple other questions, then I have some Brooklyn Nine-Nine questions, okay?
Sure, man.
Is it true that you still have framed knee pads from the movie Paul?
I do.
You keep them near you?
Do I have them? Yeah. You want me to get it?
You don't have to get them, but you do have them.
I do have them, yeah. I'm looking at them right now. They're my little.
I kind of want them to.
Why would you keep knee pads? I don't know the story. I just heard the line. Okay.
So when we shot the movie, first of all, I was thrilled to be part of that movie. Being such big fans of Simon Pegg and Nick Frost from Shaun of the Dead, again, to kind of bring it back to my love for horror movies. And so anyway, so when I did that movie, they also needed someone to play the alien when we were actually shooting because Seth Rogen, who does the voice, wasn't there. Right. And so they wanted eyelines for the actors. So in addition to O'Reilly, the character that I play in the movie, they wanted me there longer. So during the scenes with Simon and Nick, when they're talking to Paul, the alien, I could be the right eyeline. So I had these knee pads on that I, you know, for like, you know, however long we shot that movie. And then after it was done, Simon and Nick and the production were kind enough to kind of frame them and put them up. And
that's
and
say, nice. That's cool.
Yeah, it was very, very awesome. Cool. And then that was a big highlight for me. That's where I really became friends with Bill Hader, who introduced me to a lot of awesome comics. He and I watched Jaws on the 4th of July, which was a tradition that...
You're really into Jaws. That I've learned as well. You're a big Jaws advocate.
Yeah. Yeah, I got a piece of the orca. An actual piece of the orca, yeah. Buddy of mine, his family is from Martha's Vineyard, and he would kind of go through Menendez Channel and like where they beached one of the orcas on this private property. It just started rotting away. It was disappearing. It was down to the spine. And he was like, F it, I'm just going to go. And he just kind of went up there and like grabbed some pieces. And oh man, if there's a fire in this house, I'm taking that, nothing else.
That and the knee pads.
Yeah, and the knee pads.
Yeah. And I forgot to ask this, but when there was the wiener scene in The Outpost, was there any thought to go grab your prosthetic penis from Wanderlust in case he didn't have a big
penis? Pair. Yeah, well, if he wouldn't do it, I'd have to have that on, you know, standing by. I don't even know where that thing is, to be honest.
Oh, sure you don't. It's probably in your wife's other room when you're not around. It's probably where it is.
It's at Planet Hollywood. It's in the Planet Hollywood.
Yes. Yeah.
You know, when they reopen that chain again.
Yes, it's the corner booth. It's very exciting.
I have to admit, I was a fucking huge, huge fan of Brooklyn Nine-Nine. Loved it. And in fact, a girl that was on this show You remember the episode where one of the two older guys gets screwed out of money, marries like a Russian woman that doesn't speak English, right?
Kind of, I remember.
And she was on the show. She's a comic, and she was actually on the show, which is kind of funny. But you met Andy originally in I Love You, Man, right? That's where you guys first met.
Yeah.
And you just stayed friends, and you auditioned like anybody else would audition.
Yeah.
But you already knew him. But you had said a few times there were some other great actors up for Boyle. Can you tell us anyone that was up for Boyle that you got over them?
Yeah. I mean, one was an incredible comic named John Glazer, who is just phenomenal. And someone that ended up being on the show in a pretty big part, Mark Evan Jackson, Holt's husband.
And so
he also was in the room, and I'm forgetting a couple others. There were just, you know, it's so funny with these things. It's like, it kind of is what it is, right? You landed and like so many people could have done this role. I'm glad that, you know, I was the one that they chose, but yeah, that's just kind of how it played out.
Are you a foodie as well, or is that just the character?
A little bit. Yeah, no, I am. Not as much as Boyle, but yeah.
I mean, who could be as much as Boyle, but that is pretty well. So I have a couple of questions. So one, do you have a favorite cold open?
Yeah, I mean, my favorite is the one with Jake and Boyle about Diane Wiest.
That's a good one.
And where we're going back and forth and staring each other down, because at the time that, you know, the show is so fast and so quick and with its cutting, and it's very verbal. And like, there's just a moment there where you're just cutting back and forth between reactions that I think is really hilarious.
It's a good solid 30 seconds before you give your answer too.
Yeah.
I mean, hands down for me, it's the Backstreet Boys one is for sure.
For sure. I mean, that would have been my next one. I mean, that's such a great one too.
And you said somewhere that I think it won a Golden Globe, if we could be wrong with this.
Yeah,
but, Andy put the Golden Globe in the room and said, funniest ad lib this week wins the Golden Globe. What was that ad lib?
I don't even remember him doing this.
Oh, you said it somewhere.
I was out that day. I would have come in on that, you know.
And then the show had a wild thing because it got canceled, but then all these celebrities, including Luke Skywalker, Mark Hamill, came to say don't cancel the show, and it did something that I could be wrong, but I don't know. Other than Lucifer got canceled, then went to Netflix, but you guys went from a network to a network. I don't know if that's ever happened before.
I think it might have. I want to say it might have happened with Scrubs. I know Scrubs changed network, but I don't know if they canceled and then got picked up again. But I mean, that was just that blew us all away. And you know, I was I'll tell you a quick
Family Guy was the only one I can think of off the top of my head.
But Family Guy went back to the same network.
Yeah. They went to a different network. I don't think so. I can't think of one.
Yeah. I'm not sure. But when I got that news, I was under the influence, and then we had to end up tweeting about it, like in synchronicity, like, and I was not in a state of mind to do that, but ended up having to do it, like, because I was on mushrooms with a couple of people, kind of just celebrating, you know, the end of a chapter of an incredible run and ready to kind of let go. And I was with Beth and another person, and then I wasn't near my phone, and then I get the phone, and there's these texts saying, did you see your email? And now I'm like on the email, and Beth and this other person is like, what's going on? And I'm like, I'm telling them, and they start laughing and I'm laughing. And then they say, like, we're going to tweet out at 9 p.m., you know, in order of the 9-9 that we're back. And I look at my watch and it's like 10 to 9. And I'm just like, holy smokes, managed to get it out. And
explains your 2019 tweet, NBC bitches. I guess that makes more sense now. Also, by the way, congratulations. I think you're a month out from a 9-year anniversary with your wife. You've been together a long time. So congratulations on that. It's pretty fucking cool. When I Googled unanswered questions from the Brooklyn Nine-Nine season finale, the two biggest ones came up about your storyline.
Oh, yeah.
One being, where was Genevieve? Because she never really reappeared that much. And then the second one, which I want to get answers on both of them, is who exactly was Bill Hummertrout? Because he played your double.
Oh yeah, yeah. Well, Bill was portrayed by a great actor, Winston Story, great guy, and he and I are still friends. I don't know what he did in the show other than just the act is Boyle's double, but he was great, man. He just was terrific. And then what was the other question?
Genevieve.
So we don't know what happened. Like, I think the way these storylines work, it's always like the writers are always trying to kind of wrap up so many things, and we have so many incredible supporting characters that jump in. You lose track. I asked about it a few times, and I think we tried to get Mary Lynn Raskob is just incredible. Oh my God.
Yeah, she really is.
Wanted her back in there, but you know, it's how these things work. It's just like wherever the stories go, they go.
Yeah. It's funny though. I did always enjoy, especially your character's food lines. I'm obsessed with food. So I kind of really related to all that nonsense in a way that I would drive an hour to go get some special stupid thing that's only there for a week and a half in season or whatever. So I do appreciate that very much. And then you said that one of your favorite memories on Brooklyn Nine-Nine was the first season you did beef jerky tastings off camera. And then a little known fact about you, you were in a Jack Links commercial. So it all ties together.
It tied together. Exactly. Yeah, that was so Andy and I are big jerky lovers. And so we're like, we ordered from some company or maybe some company heard this and then gave us some samples. And then we started having some tasting contests with the cast. And then we did another one with hot sauce. Just hot sauce tasting, and that blew Terry Crews out of the water. He had to get out of there. It's ironic. He ended up doing hot ones. But anyway, those were pretty great because it was there's so much downtime when you shoot these things, and so we're like, all right, let's do something.
That's cool. That's really wild. It's a nice bonding experience. Who had the highest tolerance on the set of the hot?
I want to say it was like Stephanie or Melissa. It was one of the girls.
Well, the Latin blood, you're probably more used to the heat, right?
I mean,
the spicy food, I'm sure.
The Irish can't handle it.
All right, before we go any further, it's two simple words. One is 60 and one is dollars. $60. In what form? Kilos. That's right. Kilos of kratom. You feel cool. You're buying in kilos. Only drug dealers do that. Well, drug dealers and Kratom fans. And if you go to yourkratom.com, you could stock up on all the Kratom you want at $60 a kilo. High quality curated Kratom delivered directly to your door with super fast shipping. Really good quality Kratom. And they've been a loyal sponsor to this show and the entire Gas Digital Network for 3 years, three fucking years, they've been a part of this network. It's amazing. So go there, yokratom.com. I know Shannon likes the train wreck. I've seen a lot of other strains around the studio. Everybody loves their Kratom. And you, too, can stock up on $60 kilos at yokratom.com. Let's get back into it.
Yeah, I know.
And speaking of which, you're Italian and Irish, right? And you went to Ireland for your pre-bachelor party trip, whatever you went, in 2014, which is now you've been married 9 years.
Yeah.
I'm leaving to Ireland in a week and a half.
Where are you going?
I'm going to run a half marathon in Ballyvaughan, which is like on the other side.
Is that the West Coast side?
Yeah, the West Coast.
Yeah. Oh, that's amazing. You're flying into Shannon there. Nice. Okay.
Yeah. So I've never been to Ireland, but I do this stupid thing where I every 3 or 4 months I run a half marathon in a different country. So I'm going there for the first time.
Congratulations. Wow, good luck. I mean, Ireland, I'm a dual citizen. I got my citizenship there and, I just love that country. It's just beautiful. I love the people there. Just funny. And you're going to love it, man. And the West Side is really beautiful. And if you can get up to Donegal, the northern part of the Republic of Ireland is incredible, too. But it's all great. I want to get back. Beth hasn't been there. My son hasn't been there. And so we're due. We're from our side. Our family, the Lynches, are from County Cork. That's a part.
I'm spending like 3 or 4 days on the West and then 3 days in Dublin. We just had the Cranberries on the show not long ago.
Oh, wow.
And maybe I'm crazy, but it doesn't seem like anyone gets too passionate about Irish food. He didn't even seem that passionate about it. When I asked him where to go, he's like, I guess you could go here. Like, it didn't seem like that's not a part of it.
They got a lot of great things over there. Food isn't at the top of the list, but let me say this. Their dairy is incredible. Like any dairy, I had a clam chowder over there that was incredible. And then, you know, you got shepherd's pie and you got, you know, corned beef and cabbage, all that stuff is great. Right. But yeah, food is probably not at the top. Yeah.
That's your challenge.
What's your background, Lando? Are you Irish?
I'm Irish and Italian.
Oh, you guys are kindred spirits.
But I have the random last name, even though it was originally Donnellan.
Well, you know, my parents were born in, Brooklyn. I mean, and, you know, New York, and then, you know, Irish Italian. That's, I think we started.
We were Detroit, which is also the Irish and Italian. It's where they just like migrated down the Rust Belt, you know, all the way up to Chicago, like all the Irish and Italians.
Right, right, right.
Yeah. Ralph,
are you
not, what are you saying? Sorry.
Yeah, you. You're,
Hey, what are you? I'm a weird mix. So my father's family is from Syria. Okay. And my mother's family was from Spain and Greece. So Mediterranean, Middle Eastern.
Handsome.
I didn't care for any of that.
Kind of weird, right? Yeah, it is kind of weird. Now that this movie is coming out now, like right this week, I believe, right?
Next week, May 19th.
Next week, yeah. Well, when this comes out, I was trying to trying to be cool about that.
The question I blew it, just like now, the Do Not Disturb.
You're really nailing it, by the way. You're
nailing it today.
Are you excited to write and direct another project, or was this 3-4 years like, well, I'm gonna just go back to comedy for a bit, take a break and start again, or is this a new passion?
It's certainly a new passion. I'm never giving up comedy. I mean, like, you know, you'll see, you know, in this day and age, you go where the work goes, you go where the road opens up to. I definitely want to do another horror movie. I have quite a couple of ideas. And but comedy is just, you know, it's the bread and butter, and I love it. And you know, I hope with you know, Bedrock and Mayhem and these other projects, we can get something going again.
Right. Yeah, I get you. And also, by the way, not a little weird bone to pick. I watched your episode of Family Feud, right? Ah. And the question was, how many commercials in an hour? As a man who works in that landscape, I knew the answer. It's like, it's, you know, it's a 22-minute show for a
Ralph, it was a lot
hour.
Of pressure, man. A lot of pressure, Fast Money. You got Steve there breathing over your shoulder. You know, you got your family, your fans in front of you. And then math numbers, come on.
Yeah, and then by the way,
Keenan impression just going through your head while he's talking.
Exactly. Yeah, I'm sure it is. Yeah.
Did you catch me laughing when it, like, name a Beatle, and the first Beatle I said was Ringo?
Right, but it ended up being the number one fucking pick.
I couldn't believe it.
Really?
You know, it was. All I was thinking of, all my friends, as soon as they saw me, they were like, really? That's the first Beatle you think of?
Do you know how happy that made Ringo?
Yeah. Like, but it was wild because they tell you the number one. First. It was the number one pick, which is bizarre to me.
But it makes sense because, like, it's such a strange name, and a lot of people aren't, you know and love the Beatles maybe as much as we all do. I don't know. Right.
And just was when you said it, I was even like, Ringo, but then it ended up being the number one answer. I'm like, all right, well, maybe he knew something I didn't fucking know.
They did break up some time ago, so you don't know who you did survey at this point.
Yeah,
I panic. A huge part of our childhood because of our parents, but like, I don't think my kid cares.
Right. Yeah.
Exactly. So just realistically,
not to keep name dropping, but when Gene Simmons was in studio, he compared themselves to the Beatles because he said everyone knows John, Paul, George, and Ringo, and everybody knows Ace, Peter, Gene, and Paul.
Right.
And at the time, I was like, maybe if you're over 40, because I was dating a girl at the time, was a little younger, she came into the show, and we said, name the Beatles. She named all four. And I said, name the guys a kiss. She's like, I don't know. And it was like, it really was great. It really was a good moment. Really
you put him right there in the spot. Man.
Yeah. Yeah. And there's a very funny after show video of him not being happy about it. But anyway,
of course,
one thing that, so this, I do a second show. I do two shows. They could not be more polar opposites. One is this SDR, Sex, Drugs, and Rock and Roll. The other show is called Good Sugar. And it's with a guy that I work with who, he started a very successful, you come to New York often, you might see them, a company called Juice Press. There's like 100 of them. Yeah. He sold it, made a fortune. And now we're partners in this podcast. And we opened up our first vegan restaurant on the Upper East Side of 3rd and 69. But the reason why I say that is that a big part of that show is about mental health and getting into a good headspace and finding your inner happiness and peace and whatnot. And I was 2 years ago, over 100 pounds heavier because my father had died and I went through a lot of shit, and going through meditation and yoga and running and all these things to help me get into a better headspace. Yeah. You are very open about how you're now seeing a therapist. You're doing things to keep yourself in a better sense of alignment. What was the catalyst for you to take that step?
Well, For me, it was just wanting to look about some of the things that were blocking me emotionally. And it really began and still is with, you know, for Beth and I, couples therapy. I mean, it begins there. I you know, learning how to communicate, learning what is going to help you grow. We're two different people. I mean, we're married 9 years, but we've been together 20. Yeah. And just you're different people now. And like, so and with different goals and aims and whatnot. And so, you know, I think there's such, unfortunately, such a stigma to mental health. I'm very proud that Gravitas is releasing Outposts during Mental Health Awareness Month, which is May. That's a big, I'm very, very happy about that. And I hope that the stigma of mental health just goes away, because it's, you really open yourself up and you really start to feel things more without all the anything else. You're just like, you feel more alive. You feel like you are more present. And everyone's going through it, man. Everyone's, whether they're showing it or not, there's a battle going on, you know, inside. Yeah. And the less you, you know, or the more you wipe out those armies that are fighting each other inside, just the happier you're going to be. Yeah, so it's wild. It's also comforting for doing that.
Thank you. It's just comforting. You see a guy like you, you're, you know, famous for 30 years, basically, you know, married for 9 years with a kid. It, you know, it's nice to see that someone like you can be open about it, because it is, there is that like suck it up and be a man vibe that finally never seems works. To get pulled back a little bit. So it's nice to see.
It never works if you bottle that stuff up.
The Outpost experience what brought on the couples therapy? Because then we could say, wow,
no.
Outpost.
that was well before actually. And it certainly helped through it without a doubt.
That's cool.
Yeah.
That's pretty wild.
Hey, I'm Jamie.
And I'm Justina.
And we're the hosts of Just So You Know, a podcast where we get to the bottom of suspicious stories and outright lies we're being told by companies that profit off of animals.
You think Elon Musk is shady? Wait until you hear our episode about his sinister brain experiments.
First he ruined Twitter, now he's coming for your actual brain.
No.
We've also got one about that time I stormed the runway at New York Fashion Week to protest Coach's leather handbags.
Yeah, I heard they weren't happy about that.
I couldn't tell you. They're not talking to me at the moment.
And we're just getting started. In the coming weeks, we're going to blow the lid off of everything from shady pet dealers to monkeys held hostage by coconut milk companies to the astonishing secret behind the no animals were harmed message you see at the end of movies.
And so much more. We'll hope you join us for this surprisingly fun journey full of strange characters, secretive companies, and a whole world of stuff they really don't want you to know.
Subscribe to Just So You Know wherever you get your podcasts and look for our new episodes every Thursday. Just So You Know is a PETA production.
And so, you know, your wife is in it. I am assuming you knew right away, I'm putting my wife in this. You weren't thinking about, am I going to do a casting call? She's the right person for this.
No, because like, I really did know that she could do this role. Like I knew that she would be able to do it. But also, if we're going to make an independent movie, that's just going to be in my life and in this household for a while. And it would just be foolish not to include that. I mean, we're both trying to create, you know, a production company, What's That Noise Films. That was just our inaugural project. And, you know, we're thinking ahead. So that was an easy call.
And then you just had to dip into the Brooklyn Nine-Nine money to fund it yourself, I guess.
That's right. Yeah. You know, and to be fair, I mean, there were two other investors that helped. And it was nice to have a small pool. Like it was me and two other guys. So, you know, we were able to kind of make the movie that we wanted to make.
It's interesting because that one of my best friends was an actress for years. She's been going through that as well. You know, and she's won awards. It's just wild to see that it almost doesn't matter what level you're at. These movies still struggle sometimes to get financed. It's pretty wild.
Yeah, it's amazing that any movie gets made. It's true. Like the amount of work and hoops that you have to jump through, even after you shoot it, you're just like, distribution alone is crazy. Yeah. So it's hard for me now when I watch a movie that is bad or I don't like, I'll never say, call them out. I'll just like see what's there, man. Cause I know I've been there. It's like a kid. It's like your little kid. And now he's going out to the world and he's seeing someone beat up on your kid. You just get your feathers all ruffled up.
And you said that the movie that you write, the movie that you shoot, and the movie that you release are three different movies. How different was the storyline originally? Like, was there less about the PTSD? Was there more horror, or is this somewhat close to your original?
There was, There was more about Earl, the park ranger character, the boss, and his sister. There was a little bit more
Otto, the guy that plays that, right? Yeah,
Otto Osando, great actor. He, you know, there was a little bit more of that story. We wanted to focus it more on the main person, but also there were some other. I want to say this out without spoiling it. There were other scenes that kind of revealed the kind of surprise at the end earlier that during editing, we kind of moved around. So the script that we went in and shot with, and if you were to transcribe the movie now, is actually quite different. There's scenes kind of out of order and other scenes, clips that we kind of added to really get across the PTSD nightmare sections, because a lot of it was like Jacob's Ladder. There's a lot of like, just intense, like flashes of like terror that she goes through. And that wasn't in the script. That was something we discovered in post.
And then a great actor who plays a neighbor, Dylan Baker, who's just been in everything. Oh. Just such a great actor. He's great in it. And then, am I right? I could be wrong, but one of the guys in the grocery store for a half second is one of your like friends. It's like one of the guys from the state or something. Am I wrong?
You're wrong. But the one of the guys that's in that scene,
he's like looking at one line, and I thought, I was like, he looks familiar, and I couldn't figure out who it was.
Yeah, I'll tell you who it is. This is a great little Easter egg. That guy, the last time you saw this guy was in the 1985 movie Vision Quest, and he plays like the coach or the captain. I'm forgetting, but he was in that movie. And when I was putting like his name, the IMDb, comes back. It's like, this guy hasn't been around for a while. Are you sure it's the same guy? And I'm like, it's the guy from his name's Kevin Lease. And also just that cabin that the movie takes place in, that's his cabin.
Oh, wow. That's funny. He did look familiar. I knew him from something, and I just couldn't figure out what it was.
That was it. Yeah, that was it. But getting back to Dylan and Becky, I just want to say, like, those two, they're also married. They couldn't have been more supportive. They love supporting independent movies, short films. They're great to be around. They came in and kind of on their own dime, rented their car and drove around Idaho. And they were just awesome. Dylan and I've known, I got a poker game with some buddies back in New York, and he's in that group. And I've known Dylan for over 10 years now. So for me, a lot of the success of the movie was kind of surrounding myself with friends, people that were better than I was at this stuff. And that's why I think the movie worked so well.
Great.
I'm sorry, go ahead, Dave.
You're fine. No, I just think that sounds great to have that support.
Are you, are you ever looking to do some sort of, like, I know, because Brooklyn Nine-Nine, I felt like had there not been the chaos of the years that we went through, it might have continued, right? Once we started having the protests and the defund the police stuff, and I'm sure a lot of storylines had to get changed and altered. Do you think that if that world didn't happen, that it might have gone on a few more years?
I don't think so. And I say that because, you know, I think Dan Gore and Andy, I think Dan Gore especially, it's a tiring job, and I'm not trying to do small violins and all that, but like it did take its toll. And I think that they were worried about the kind of quality of the stories. And even, you know, some of the episodes were familiar, and we were revisiting a lot of the same stuff. And I think they just wanted it to kind of end at a right place. So even aside from all the stuff that happened back then, I think we were coming to kind of the end of an era. I don't think it was those certainly made it a little bit easier, all those events for sure. But I think a lot of it was just that we were wearing down, and we didn't want to jump the shark. And I think we'll be back at some point, I think, for a reunion. There's nothing in the works. I'm not, you know, dangling any carrot, but we all really like each other. We all had a great time doing that show. And
I mean, you should do the Reno 911 model where they do a movie every few years or something fun like that. Why not?
Absolutely.
You know?
Yeah. People would love that. Yeah. It's difficult to kind of push past 7 seasons, I think, for any show that's ever been on.
I wanted to do one more. I wanted to get to 9, and I wanted to do 9 episodes, and then we could have gone.
Oh, that would have made so much more sense. Jesus Christ.
Yeah, it does. That does make a lot more sense.
Now I'm angry, for God's sake. What about a one-off state reunion? You're all still friends.
Just begging from a fan.
There's a text chain on my phone with all of us, and we're going around and looking. We have some bites, but, you know. We'll
I know someone that funds movies. His name's Joe. You could fucking fund it. Why not? Right? Come on now.
That's
Do you consider doing like a tour with them at all? Have you ever considered like a live tour?
I don't think so, because like we're all 50, like none of us want to go like on tour anymore. Right. And it's pretty busy. I mean, to be honest, like, I don't know how many we're going to get the whole group back if we do a show. So, I mean, we'll see, but I think a live show we can do for sure, but a tour probably not.
That would be fucking cool as shit. That would be awesome.
Yeah, live show would be incredible.
All right, so before we wrap and do plugs, we got to do the name of the show is the SDR show. Let's hit the first.
The first time ever I saw concert, did drugs, had sex.
We ask this to every guest since the dawn of time, their first experience with all three. We start with rock and roll, and we just mean it doesn't have to be a rock concert. The first concert you went to because Joe wanted to go. Your parents didn't grab you. You're like, I want to go see that show. And hopefully it's a band we know, not some local band from Florida that we've never heard of.
It's great. I brag about this all the time. My first concert was down in Miami at the Orange Bowl, and it was Bruce Springsteen's Born in the USA tour.
Oh, that's a good one. Nice. That's a very good one. How old were you? I guess we're the same age.
I was probably 13. You know, 13, 14. The end of the year, so I was like 13 or 14. Yeah,
that's pretty cool. That's a good one.
Yeah. That was incredible. He played for like 4 hours, and it was amazing.
That's awesome.
And then later, I caught you two there as well in '87. And then recently, when they did their 30-year anniversary at the Rose Bowl, when they did the Joshua Tree tour here, so.
My friend just went to something. I don't even know what it was, but Bono did some sort of solo event in New York City.
Yes.
And he was at that. He said it was incredible. I didn't see it, though.
At the Beacon, right?
Yeah. He said it was like stories and singing, and it was incredible.
Was it for his book tour?
I think it's for his book tour, but he sings tour, also. Yeah. He like tells stories and sings. It's supposed to be great. And now
have you seen that sort of homecoming show? That's the documentary with Edge and Bono and Letterman?
No.
Yeah, it's fantastic. They go back. Letterman goes back to Ireland and just interviews both of those guys, and they go around. It's great. It's worth checking out if you're a fan. Yeah.
Now, the first drug you ever did after weed, unless weed wasn't your first drug.
Oh, after weed. I think it was, it was mushrooms. The second time I bring mushrooms up. Like, so I was with some college buddies, and we took a little trip to Brown University to visit Michael Showalter, who had transferred from NYU at the time. And I was with Kevin Allison, another guy from the state, and a couple other people that you wouldn't know. And that was my first. That was the drug I did after marijuana. And that was, again, I was pretty straight edge in high school. I got drunk at 14 and then was straight edge, didn't do any drugs, and then waited to college where my first marijuana experience, I slipped into terrible paranoia. And then the second time I was all right. So that was mushrooms. And I kind of journaled during that trip in Claude Brown's Man-Child in the Promised Land. That was because I just wanted to write, send someone to write, and that's all I had. So I was writing in the margins, you know, like a play-by-play of what I was feeling the whole time.
Oh, do you still have that by any chance?
I do.
Oh, wow. That's cool. Yeah. That's pretty wild to have. And now the first time you had sex.
That would have been on New Year's Eve, bringing in 1987.
All right, so you were 17.
Yeah, I was 16. 16, I was 16. 17.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. And was it a high school girlfriend?
Yes, a high school girlfriend. And just to bring some music in there, I think Chicago was playing. And I love Chicago. I know that's pretty cheesy, but I love Chicago. But what wasn't cool about it was that I think it was like Chicago 19 or 18, or it wasn't, you know, it wasn't 16 or 17, which I feel are the best ones.
I've told this story before, but this is not my first time having sex, but I was drunk and I was having sex with a girl, and it was in the glory days of 80s hair metal, and we were having sex, and I've noticed that Europe's The Final Countdown is repeated again.
No way.
And I said, oh, that song started again. And the girl looks, she goes, it's been playing over and over again for 20 minutes. Like she thought it was my fuck song. because of the intro. And I had to explain I was drunk and not paying attention.
Oh, I thought you were going to say the final countdown, and you were going to count down to the orgasm or something.
Oh, no, that would be great.
But it was your fuck song, though, right?
Yeah, it was. It still is to this day.
Yeah, I was going
to
say.
And then my final question, do you still believe there's nothing like a man hug?
Do I believe in man hugs?
You said there's no feeling better than a man hug is what you said.
I totally agree. I'm all for it.
I'm all for it. I'm a big man hug. I'm good with it.
That was one of the reasons why I love Boyle too, man. He just had unadulterated physical affection that, you know, we need more of that, man. Men need more of that stuff. I think there'd
Do
be
you think
less-
some of that unabashedly yeah. openness rubbed off on you? That made you more open to the idea of therapy and stuff?
Oh, for that? Maybe. I think, you know, I was always pretty like open with that stuff and pretty affectionate. But like, yeah, living in Boyle's shoes, certainly, you know, I didn't think twice about it after that.
Right. That's cool. Yeah, it's such a great, well-written character. Dave, yeah, before absolutely. We wrap, any other questions you want to ask?
What is the favorite movie that you've made that wasn't obviously yours, but that you think that anybody should watch and enjoy, even if people think it might be outdated, anything, what's your favorite movie that you've been in?
All right, my hot take is that, and I say this movie all the time because a lot of people don't like it. I think it's great because Beer League. It's Artie Lang's Beer League, which is a movie that I love. Because
I used to be on a radio show with Artie Lang as a co-host. I love that movie.
Yeah, I just think it's so unapologetic. It's very anti-PC, you know. And
is
no
that
disrespect
Broken Lizard
any
guys?
Of the,
is that
any of the movement? I think that's all valid. But like, I just loved Slapshot and Bad News Bears. Not comparing it to those classics, but in that vein, like I just. And it was also the first movie that I was a part of that wasn't part of like the state group, you know? And right. So I felt like after the state broke up, it took a while for me to find my own identity and my footing. And a lot of the guys doing Reno and there was Wet Hot. And so, you know, that movie for me represented Joe kind of getting something without his friends.
Right.
And so I also think it's just a fun, funny movie.
Oh yeah. Jerry Minor's great in that. You're great in that. There's a lot of people that are in that
movie.
That are just really good.
Use it for a second. Beer League and Beer Fest. Cause we just had the Broken Lizard on.
Yeah.
Now I remember. Yeah.
Beer League's got like Florentine and a lot of stand-up comics and then a lot of improvisers and stuff too. From his Mad TV.
Yeah, a lot of good, a lot of old, great comics in there. You'd be like, oh, yeah, him. But
it's a good movie.
Cool. Sure. I remember it now because I got them both like intermixed in my head for a second.
Yeah.
All right. So you can follow Joe, though he doesn't need the help because he has like fucking 1 million plus 2 million followers on Instagram. On Instagram, just put his whole name in at Joe. No, you don't have to say the G, Joe Latrulio on Instagram. And the book, I mean, the movie is going to be out next week when this comes out. It's called Outpost. Is it Outpost the Movie is the website?
No, it's just outpostmovie.com.
Outpostmovie.com.
It has all the information that you would need about it there. And thanks for having me, guys. This has been really amazing.
Anything else you want to plug before we do our plugs around the room?
No, we got Muppets Mayhem there and hopefully Bedrock, and another show, Monsters at Work, which was, based on the movie. So that's another Disney animated show that will be on at some point.
You know, it's funny, for years I've had a Dr. Teeth and Mayhem t-shirt, and now it's just going to look like I'm following the trend of the new reboot, but I've had that shirt for years and I feel like it's going to now lose its. I just feel like not as cool now because now it's like the reboot. People think I'm jumping on board it. Oh, what are you going to do? Dave, your plugs?
You can check me out, tour dates, DaveLanda.com, and you can go to Normal World and subscribe for the new sketch show that's going to be put on there and Blaze TV. Check it out there.
Okay, follow me everywhere at I Am Ralph Sutton. My other podcast I mentioned earlier, the Good Sugar Podcast, comes out every Monday. Come to 3rd Avenue and 69th Street. We're open 7 days a week. Get some healthy food. And there is a very low carbon footprint. No single-use plastics. Just come on down and check it out. We end the show. Also, our producer Shannon's not here. She has a show called The Thing Is. It's about bad dates, fighting, and ghosts. And we always ask the guest at the end, although I kind of know the answer because they did the research already, is whether or not Joe believes in ghosts. And the answer, I believe, is you've never seen one, but you believe in energies and stuff like that. So you're believer.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, I don't like cheating. I knew the answer, so I don't like. We usually guess, But I knew.
Yeah, yeah.
So what are you going to do? I heard it somewhere.
They're out there.
All right, we're going to play a song from Bruce Springsteen. You want anything off the Born in the USA? Maybe Cover Me or something. Anything you want?
Yeah, Cover Me is great. Yeah,
right, we'll do Cover Me, and thank you, everyone. We'll see you next time on the SDR show.
Listening to the SDR show.